You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
This episode and the entire season is proudly brought to you by California Cryobank. Use code QueerFam for a free level 2 subscription at cryobank.com.
The Queer Family Podcast. Love is love is love on the Queer Family Podcast. Love is love is love on the Queer Family Podcast. Love is love is love on the Queer Family Podcast. Love is love.
I did an album about stillbirth and, you know, was specific about our story connected to the stillbirth of our first daughter, Leo Pearl. And also there's like all kinds of struggle and pregnancy loss, and none of it in, you know, it's my view that like none of it is worse. There's no grief Olympics. Like all of it sucks. Yeah. Because all of it is in the context of trying to experience joy and bring life into the world, which like what more magical thing than that is there in this life?
Welcome to the Queer Family Podcast, the show all about family, but with gay. My name is Jamie. I'm your host. And if you are in the mood to listen to a story that uplifts, highlights, normalizes, and celebrates LGBTQIA plus families in all of our beautiful identities, you've come to the right place, y'all. You've come to the right place. Now, before I talk about the interview that's coming in, I do want to give a trigger warning. We talk about a stillbirth in this episode. And so if that is something that you're sensitive to or could be harmful to you, take caution. I had the immense pleasure of sitting down and talking to Liz Glaser. Liz is an award-winning stand-up comedian. Liz is also a queer mom, which is why she came on the show. And she had a pretty tough road to parenthood. And that's what we discuss in this here episode. Now, although we do discuss a pretty heavy topic in this episode, I do want y'all to know that we did end up laughing a lot, which is awesome because Liz is funny. And Liz has found like a really unique way of talking about what she went through with humor without taking away from the gravity of her situation of what she went through. And you have to just listen. You're going to love it. I love Liz. You're going to love her too. Before I roll the tape though, I got a story to tell you. All right. So in true lesbian fashion, the other day, my wife and I took our kids to watch the National Women's Soccer League play a game. We were watching Gotham play the Kansas City Current right? And we were kind of late when we got there. So I dropped Anne and the kids off at the gate and I went and parked the car. And so I was coming in and I was looking for them. And the game had already started. We were late. And I'm walking around. I'm walking down the aisle or whatever you call it. I don't know. I'm in theater. I'm walking down the aisle and I hear Jamie. And I'm obviously, I assume it's my wife and our friends who we were meeting there. I look over and it's somebody I don't recognize. And so I'm like, I guess she saw the look on my face and she's like, oh, you don't know me, but I know you from the podcast. And then in my head, I'm like, oh my God, I got recognized. I'm like a public figure. Like, this is amazing. Like, I never get recognized, y'all. I know I'm not a public figure, but in my head, I'm like, oh, somebody recognized me from this show. Also, side note, I have to say, these soccer games are like lesbian Mecca. Like, they are a outside, outdoor gay, outdoor lesbian bar, for reals. Like, there are so many lesbians at these games. It's the best, the bomb. Anyway, so she's like, you don't know me. I know you from the podcast. I'm like, oh my God, that's amazing. She's like, yeah, actually, you know, like I had written you an email way back because we wanted to become Patreon members because we love what you're doing and blah, blah, blah. And so, and they're also Patreon members, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, oh, thank you. That's so cool. You know? And she goes, yeah, that's my wife. And she points to the field and I'm like, what? She's like, yeah, that's my wife. And she points and I look, she's pointing to the freaking goalie. Like, she's pointing to the goalie of the National League soccer team, like the goalie. I'm like, oh, wow, that's your wife. Wow, that's amazing. That's so cool. And like, I'm just like kind of taken aback. I don't know what to say. And then so I snap a picture with her, which went up on the social, and her beautiful baby's in her lap. It's just adorable. Snapped a picture with her, finally found Anne and our friends. And I'm like, you guys, I just met somebody who's a fan of the podcast and that's her wife. And they're like, who? I'm like, the goalie over there. And they're like, dude, that's Adriana Franch. Like, she's amazing. Like, that's an amazing soccer player, like famous. And I'm like, what? They're like, dude, that's amazing. You were just talking to her wife. And I'm like, oh God, Jamie, you're such a dummy. This whole time I'm like, ooh, I'm so famous. I'm like, ooh, I'm recognized. How cool am I? And I'm sitting there talking to somebody who really is super famous. So this is my way of saying, aha, you know, Emily Biscotti French, who Emily like was laughing because apparently we said her name like completely wrong. We didn't know how to say her name when we mentioned her in the episode when she became a Patreon member. I'm saying it now, Emily Biscotti French. I think I'm saying it right. But anyway, Emily, this is my way of saying to you, I should know who you are. I'm the dummy. I'm the a-hole. I should know. But, you know, like, I don't really do sports, as we all know. I'm not like the sports lesbian. I do love women's soccer, though. That's the one I can pay attention to. Anyway, Emily, I'm in awe of you. I should have gotten your autograph. And now, if you're listening to this, now I need you to reach out to me, DM me. You can call me at 646-470-1840. And I need to get you on the show, obviously, because I need to hear y'all's story about making your family. And you were like in the process of making your family when you first reach out. Now you have a baby. So I need to know. SMH, smack my head, Jamie. Ay, ay, ay. Anyway, super cool moment that happened. And I should know my soccer players. I'm going to brush up. I feel like I probably lost my lesbian toaster with that move, or I like a notch out of my lesbian card. I don't know. I gotta gain some lesbian points. Anyway, okay. I think it's time to roll the tape. Everybody, you know, go on Patreon, support me on Patreon at the Queer Family Podcast. As you all know, every little bit helps. And thank you all you Patreoners who are still supporting the show. Let's roll the tape. Nicole, Helen, and Beulah, who still sit around and do nothing because they're not real. Please, my lovely, lovely assistants, please, all of you, roll this tape. It's a good one, y'all. Enjoy.
Queer Family Podcast, love is love.
Hi, Liz.
Hi, Jamie.
It is a pleasure, pleasure, pleasure to have you here on the Queer Family Podcast.
Thanks for having me.
I can't wait to hear your story. First, need to ask you, because I ask all of my guests, how do you identify? I am she, her, hers. What? Mm-hmm. How about you?
She, her, babe. And I I do identify as female. I'm a lesbian. I'm 44. I'm anxious. I'm not tired right now.
Good.
So that's
wow, good.
Great. Yeah.
That's amazing.
I know. It is. And I am a stand-up comedian, and I used to be a tenured law professor, but I've been doing stand-up for 10 years at this
point. So that's why
point.
This is going to be fun.
Yeah. Let's hope. So
this is going to be fun.
And I came out with my debut stand-up comedy and storytelling album called A Very Particular Experience, which is available basically anywhere you can get a song, iTunes, Sirius, Spotify. And it is, that album is a stand-up album with jokes. And also, it's about the stillbirth of my wife's and my first daughter, Leo Pearl, of blessed memory. So that's part of the journey for getting to our family. We have a daughter, Eloise, who is 4 months old. Thank God, knock on wood. I'm Jewish, but I hedge my bets.
Congrats.
And thank you. Thank you. And
4 months. Oh God. And you're not tired? What the hell?
Right. Liz? Right this second, I'm not tired. I had to think about it. As you're asking me how I identify, that might normally be how I identify, but not right this
not second. Not today.
But
just babe. Babe.
Yeah.
I'm going to start saying that too. Babe.
Feel free.
You can call me babe. Listen, Liz, I usually do the 30-second elevator pitch, as all the listeners know.
Oh, I thought that was it.
No, but you just did it. We're not doing it. Like, that was beautifully done. You're just such a professional. It's done.
I thought that was my direction, was to do it. So that's why I just was like, did it. Or just nervous. That's probably, you know, nervous, like, okay, you got to just do it. So, yeah.
Well, you did it. You knocked it out of the park.
I appreciate you.
And also, if you can do stand-up comedy, it's my belief in the world that you can do anything. That is
wow.
I've been on stages. I'm from musical theater. Like,
sure.
Stand-up comedy, no thank you. No thank you. Scariest thing in the world to me. There is no way in hell. So I feel like you could do anything. So that's my two cents.
I don't feel that way, but I appreciate that. I'm not saying that stand-up isn't challenging. For sure it is, but I think about this all the time because I've had like a lot of allegedly jobs. Like, I've been a lawyer, I've been a law professor, I act, I do stand-up, whatever. But it's like I don't know how to like fix my car. I don't know. You know, like, we had a plumbing issue in our house. And it's like, it's nothing like plumbing issues that you're like, I don't know how to do a damn thing.
Lost your lesbian card right there. That's all I gotta say.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I talk about how insecure I am as a lesbian because I really feel that. Because I don't know how to do anything, you know?
Well, you do a lot of things, like law. That's a thing.
Sure.
But yeah, I am actually very excited for this conversation. We actually met through a mutual friend.
Yeah.
And Melissa, my friend, shout out to Melissa.
Yeah, I love Melissa.
Yeah, I'm best friends with her sister, Melissa's sister, Alexis.
Okay.
She said, I keep telling Alexis that you have to tell her to have Liz on, but Alexis isn't telling you. So she DM'd me and I was like, Melissa, oh my God.
Oh,
so finally,
that's so nice.
Finally.
Yeah.
So let's take it back, Liz, if you don't mind. Can we take it back all the way to kind of like, this is a tough question for us queers, but to the beginning of family thinking, you know what I mean? Like, did you always want kids? When did you come out? How did that change it?
I have always enjoyed children, but I never had a plan about having children. I always knew I was gay. I did date men, not like that many, but like I had a boyfriend in college.
Yeah,
and I still knew I was gay. Like, I told him at the beginning of when we started dating, I'm like, I'm pretty sure I'm gay. But like, you know, we were like basically kids and we dated for a while. And then I, you know, kissed Marissa. As you do. Right? In senior year, which was like right at the time. My boyfriend at the time was older. And so he had already graduated from college. And so we were long distance that year. And I was telling him at that time, like, you know, I think I've just been hanging out with this girl, Marissa. And anyway, and he kind of, I think, had a sense of where it was going. Cause he's like, you can't see Marissa anymore. And I remember, recounting that, it's like, well, what right did he have? Whatever. But like, I understand right. where he was coming from. Like, he was right in terms of his perception of her as like a threat. Not that he would have put it that way, whatever.
But it was a done deal. Like, it's obvious, right? Like, even you knew, everybody knew it was a done
everybody
deal.
Knew.
It's done.
Everybody knew. Everybody knew. And then, you know, one night we made out, and the next morning I called my boyfriend. I'm like, I kissed Marissa. And he was like, I hate you. And that was like how we broke up. And it was unceremonious. I guess I do feel guilty about it. Not that the relationship was perfect. I mean, this is so many years ago. I'm 44 years old. This is like truly irrelevant rehashing in terms of like what I imagine anybody continues to care about, like love-wise in their lives. But that's how it went down. And I'm not like terrifically proud of it. But in any event, then I'm gay. You know, and like, I mean, I remember at that time, I like ran around in the rain, you know, because I was like so finally excited.
The weight was lifted, Liz.
It really
it was like, yes,
for a time.
I know the feeling. Yeah.
Yeah. And Marissa and I, we're still friends. She and I are still friends to this day. She actually present at the album recording the album. Yeah.
That's amazing. So
it is amazing. She's amazing. She's a great person. In any event, and I'm married to Karen, my wife, who Melissa, our mutual friend, knows, like, you know, everybody's like long past that time.
This is so lesbian because like my connection to Alexis. The listeners know this because I've told this story, but I'm still friends with the girl who my first huge crush was, who I used to confide in Alexis to, like in late night conversations. I don't know. I don't know what I'm doing. Am I gay? And Alexis is the one. She's been with me the whole time. She's the one that was like, you're fucking gay. You're gay. Just get over it.
Right. That's hilarious.
She says she just didn't say the F word. I'm going to stand by that she did. But anyway.
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah. I've never met her, but I believe you.
Come on.
Yes. It's so lesbian that she was at the recording. And actually, and I know I'm pulp fictioning the storytelling here, but like the album.
I just love that you said that.
Which is like in the relative present, in the sense that it was, you know, just released like a few months ago and was recorded just under a year ago. It is funny. And also it's about stillbirth. And like, it's not funny in the sense that I make fun of stillbirth, like at all. And I say that like on the album itself, it's very much like I recorded it on the 1 year anniversary of the stillbirth of our first daughter, which is kind of like, I mean, I'm Jewish and I think it's kind of like a Jewish move in the sense that like all Jewish holidays are like, this temple was destroyed. Let's go to synagogue and celebrate, you know, or fast or whatever. But like, you know, in the sense that like this thing happened a year to the day prior to the recording. And my sense of it was like, the day's going to happen no matter what, you know, thank God, because we're alive to live it. And I want to, a puppy.
Hear my dog. She, you know what, Liz? She wants me to lift my covers for her so she can go under them.
Oh,
and she's going to continue to bug us until I let her do this.
Do it.
It's really a lot. Give me one sec. She's right there.
I love
She's
her.
Looking
of
at
course.
Me. Like, what the hell? What are you doing? Get me the covers.
I understand. Okay.
She sits there through every recording. It's a thing.
I hope you leave that in the episode because there's nothing I love more in podcasts than when someone's like, oh, we can edit this out, but, and I'm like, oh my God, they didn't edit it out. Like, I think I get excited for those other moments because it's like, oh, wow, they're telling secrets and, you know, in this instance. Yeah, exactly. But I've been thinking about that, not necessarily as a bit, but maybe as a bit, but like, it's such a thing on podcasts. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like, it is. I love
that. We can edit this, but
you have to make this a bit, please.
Yeah.
And then we can say it's because of me.
Yeah.
Because obviously.
It is. All of my bits are because of you.
Because of me, obviously.
In this non-linear time pulp fiction life we live where
same exact generation, Liz. Uh-huh. And every reference you are making is speaking to me straight good. Into my heart. So yes, yes, and yes.
Getting back. So yeah. Marissa was at the album recording. The album recording and the album itself are funny, despite the fact that there are serious things as part of it. When I came out as gay, I felt very free because I had been in this relationship that, like, you know, fundamentally and essentially, in the sense that it was with a guy and I'm like, I like women, just wasn't for me. Mm-hmm. And then I have this kind of big queer opening in my life. And I didn't meet my wife until I was 38. So for like those 17 years, dating like every kind of person who wasn't for me for like a really long time. There were moments during that time where I'm like, I know I'm gay, but like, I thought it would be easier. Like I thought, you know, I didn't know that there was going to be all this stuff with women. And I think it's just a matter of like people, but yeah, exactly. Oh, women.
Right.
And I don't mean it, you know, as I imagine you don't, in any kind of misogynistic way, but like, it's just like relationships can be hard. And actually there was one time I was at a Soul Cycle. This was probably about 2017. And I was dealing with a breakup that I really was upset about. Okay. Yeah. And so I'm going on, my friend Katie's with me in the locker room at Soul Cycle. And I'm like, ugh, I'm never, you know, whatever. I'm so sad. And all of a sudden this woman comes out of nowhere, like an apparition in the locker room. And she just looks at me and she's like, dating is hard until you find the person you're going to marry. And then it's over and then it's done. And I looked at this woman and I'm like, well, this class at this point now is definitely worth $40.
That was church. There it is.
Yeah, it was church.
You just had a vision at Soul Cycle, as you do.
It was a real woman. I just mean like she really felt like she came out of nowhere. Maybe it was a vision.
Some amazing things happen in fitness classes, in those expensive fitness classes. Some things, very some things do happen.
So she says this to me, and I really, like, I don't know if, like, the data tracks to what this woman says. You know, I don't know that it's always so easy, whatever. But I'm like, okay, well, what if that's, like, my, you know, prophecy that I've been, like, the testimony that I've been handed, and I can live my life as though it's true. Yeah. And I don't know, I mean, maybe my belief as such helped in that regard, but the next person I met was Karen, and that's my wife.
Okay, so all y'all out there who are still looking for that person, it can happen in the blink of an eye, right?
Yeah. Well, the other thing somebody told me, that friend, actually, who I was with in the locker room, Katie, she, at another point, probably a year prior to this class that we went to together, Katie said to me, she's like, you know, like, people get divorced. And because I met Karen when I was 38. And so I was already like in my mid 30s dating. I really at that point wanted to find someone. I didn't always want to find someone. I was very much like kind of like, oh, maybe I'm not looking for a commitment or that kind of thing. I went through a phase like that. But anyway, during this whole gay phase, because, you know, it is a phase. But anyway,
of course.
But I was like, you know, sad. And she was saying, she's like, people get divorced and that like provides a new wave of people. Because I think I was saying to her, like, who am I going to find? Because at that
Who's
point
left?
I was like, yeah, like I was on apps and I'm like, let me tell you, like, it's not looking great in terms of who's around. And then Katie was like, you know, you'd be surprised because like, that happens like at a certain phase that like, you know, people get divorced. And I was like, okay. And Karen, my wife, is divorced. Because everybody comes with their own things that they think people are going to care negatively about. And Karen was like, what do you think of the fact that I'm divorced? And I was like, what? Like, I didn't care. But I guess like for some people who went on dates with my wife, that was a thing. They're like, oh, you're divorced. Like, that's a deal breaker, which I'm like, okay, fine. I guess everybody has their own deal breakers. Because I was thinking about it and I was like, well, I mean, it means that you are into commitment and also that you might have learned a lesson, I guess. Like if I'm thinking about, you know, what could be a plus about dating someone who's already been married and is divorced. So,
all right. So you get married. When does baby talk come in?
So Karen had frozen her eggs actually the day before we ever started messaging. The talk of family was never not present. Karen always wanted kids. And so, and I knew that.
Yeah. And Karen had already thought through kind of, you know, the paths to which she would go down the path. And then.
Yes.
Okay. So then it's time. Okay. So when it came time, like it was like, all right, you're married. Eggs are on ice, right? So we're here. And then the decision, all right, we're going to do this. What was the conversation around how you're going to do it? What are we going to do?
I don't know that it was 100% a conversation. It was just Karen being like, and I think now is the time. And I was like, great, sounds good. You know, because I think like we tend to have like segments of our, I don't know, Karen told me it's called TRT, Total Responsibility Transfer. That's a thing, I guess.
And I've never heard of this.
I think it's like in parenting, like stuff, like on the internet or whatever, where it's like, you are in charge of the laundry. Or something like that. And I think that like Karen and I naturally fall into those types of zones in our relationship, like where it's like, oh, you do this. And honestly, I feel like with deciding around children and the timing thereof, Karen was like, had total responsibility of that.
She took the reins and you were like, okay. We're going to do it the way you want. That's an amazing way. Well, I say all the time on the show that, you know, because we're queer and we're already outside of the box.
Yes.
We're not stuck in these heteronormative molds of what the husband does and what the wife does, right? So we kind of make it up as we go. And it turns out to be like the one who does the thing better is the one who does it. Like I can't fold clothes to save my life. So I'm not allowed to do the laundry. Like that's not my job. And that's the beauty of our queer relationships. And I think straight people could learn a lot from us there.
Yeah, I think that's probably true. And when I was in my 20s and when I was a lawyer, I feel like I had more, like I felt like I should fight for stuff more. I think for me, it was like becoming an actor actually that really shifted stuff for me because I was in an acting class. And basically, like, couldn't take direction because I was always so defensive, which made sense in light of my training before, you know,
because,
like, I was a lawyer, right? And so, you know, it's like, do this. And I'm like, oh, well, the reason that I did it the other way was, it's like, nobody cares.
Nobody cares.
And just do
take the note and move on. Yeah.
Exactly.
Take the note. I can't tell you how many times I'd be in a notes session, like saying under my breath, take the fucking note. Take the fucking note. Because then it takes so long to get through the notes.
Exactly. And so this was a huge issue for me. And I know that it's an issue for other people too. You know, I'm not the first person who's like been defensive and note receiving and taking. However, I submit that my resistance to it was so intense that like I really had to either shift entirely or give up the pursuit. And so I trained myself to really just let go. And I think it was a big, big shift in my life, like kind of wholesale, not just about acting. And so it's not to say that I never argue about anything, because it's not true. But I do think that there are many instances that I would have felt like indignant or as though I should argue for my cause, whatever that might be. And I just gave it up. I mean, I ended a relationship, not that I shouldn't have ended it because it definitely should have ended, but I was with a woman. We were engaged. This was like 13 years ago now, I'm just thinking. And one of the reasons that we broke up, among many, so it's not like it was going great, but one of the reasons was that she was like, well, I want to be the sole child bearer in our relationship because she was not otherwise gay. That was like her thing. And I used to have a joke that I would say on stage that's like, my type is a straight girl looking for a reason to break up with her boyfriend, you know, because that was that person. And so she was like, listen, I am attracted to you. I never planned to be gay. which like I say where it's like, okay, we could have a few footnotes about like that being a little weird, but we were younger. I'm imagining that like this person may have had some like reflection on this experience in her life and thought like, well, maybe I had some agency there, but it really is water under the bridge. Like it does not matter anymore. But as a result, I bring it up just because the relevancy is as a result of that type of thinking, she also was like, and when I thought of my future life with, you know, a husband and children, I never imagined that I would have to share the role of being the pregnant person.
Mm-hmm.
And so you cannot be pregnant.
Mm-hmm.
And we fought about this, which, I mean, I believe in the reason I fought at that time, which was like, that's wild. Like, I'm a woman. I'm not absolving myself. Like, I'm not giving up my right to mm-hmm. give birth because like right. you never planned for like that's insane. Regardless, that's how it's turned out in my life, and I've gotten to a point where I'm like, yeah, I don't want to be pregnant.
Well, it's just interesting because that's the beauty of our relationships, right? And the hard part of our relationships.
Yeah.
We have to decide, all right, who's going to have the genetic tie?
Sure.
To this kid in particular,
right.
like you know, the one we're making right now.
Yeah.
Who gets the genetic tie? And for some of us, that's a hard decision to make. Like for me, we had two kids because my wife wanted to carry two. And I was like, well, I'm doing it too. So you're signing, like I basically made her sign a petition, like not a petition, a contract.
Yeah, yeah.
Saying we're going to have two no matter how hard this first kid is. I don't give a fuck. We're having two, you know, because
right.
I was crazy. Come to find out, it doesn't matter at all. But
yeah,
until
but
you
I
really
get it.
Sat down with yourself and realized, oh, well, maybe this doesn't matter to me. But it's the principle, right?
It's less, honestly, for me, as I look back on it, about the right or absence of a right to bear children as it was in that relationship. There were like a whole host of issues,
right.
and that
right.
was one of them. And so, you know, I think that that's like kind of the broader point of it in my life. But I find it interesting that that was the source of some of the tension in that relationship, definitely part of what precipitated the breakup. And yet mm-hmm. now I find myself not bearing children, definitely not going to bear children. And, you know, that's cool. Like, but also I'm in a relationship now with someone who, like, there's no way that I think that my daughter is less mine. I mean, because sometimes I feel like lesbians can get defensive around like the, oh, who's the real mom?
Uh-huh.
And so
yeah.
I'm always like the other way. If someone's like, who's the real mom? I'm like, it's her. Any questions, go to her. Or, you know, it's like, oh, she's so cute. I'm like, well, not
me.
Because of me. You
I
know?
Do that. I do that a lot. When people compliment my daughter, I'm like, well,
yeah.
she didn't get any of it from me. So I
right.
can take that compliment and I could be
totally.
Like, you are right.
Yes. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Right. It makes you unbiased, arguably.
Totally. Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, but you know, who's the dad? Well, sperm donor 159. You know, I just play around with it because it's like funny to me. But yeah, so that was all part of the story. And so Karen was really like into doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew that from the jump. And so there we were.
So you had eggs on ice and you agreed to use, I think, because you just said it, a sperm bank. So you went to a sperm bank.
Yeah, I don't remember which one. I think California.
You should. You can say that because they're a sponsor of this season. So you can say them
great.
Loud and proud.
Oh, yeah.
And
I'm
use them
sure.
too.
Okay. Yeah. There you go. So
California Cryobank.
Yes, that is
yeah,
I'm
baby.
99% sure that that's the bank that we used. And and
we'll be right back.
Podcast, love is love.
Liz loves California Cryobank. I love California Cryobank. Everybody loves California Cryobank. And have I mentioned that I have a promo code for California Cryobank, y'all? I do. And California Cryobank, as I just said, is my favorite. It's a full service sperm bank. And for over 45 years, y'all, California Cryobank has proudly helped tens of thousands of LGBTQIA+ clients like myself create the family of their dreams. They are the number one sperm bank in the U.S. They ship to over 40 countries. They have one of the largest and most diverse selection of sperm donors out there. To learn more, you're going to visit cryobank.com and you're going to use promo code QUEERFAM, that's QUEERFAM, for a free level 2 subscription to their donor catalog. And this promo code QUEERFAM can also be used for a really big discount on the level 3 donor catalog. So many ways to use it. Just go in there and use it. Just go use it. That's all you need to do. Let's get everybody we know using it. Share this far and wide so that California Cryobank keeps helping out our families. Okay, love y'all. Use that promo code. Yeah.
Love is love.
That's what we did. The transfers, my wife has had 2 transfers. The transfers, for us, that was not the moment that anything went awry. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I've already said that we had a stillbirth, so something did, but we honestly don't even know what it was. Like, there are some theories, and I'm happy to, like, go through what happened.
I would love to just kind of hear, like, take us through the story, and I'm bracing myself for, like, a Steel Magnolias moment.
And I don't know that I'm going to provide that. I'll give you facts of what happened. Of course. But basically, so the transfer was good.
Mm-hmm. And that's the first case. One.
Yeah, and the second one, for that matter. Like, both transfers took.
Amazing.
Which, you know, not everybody has that story. Like, that's the thing is, like, you know, I did an album about stillbirth and, you know, was specific about our story connected to the stillbirth of our first daughter, Leo Pearl. And also, there's, like, all kinds of struggle and pregnancy loss, and none of it in, you know, it's my view that, like, none of it is worse. There's no grief Olympics. Like, all of it sucks. Yeah. Because all of it is in the context of trying to experience joy and bring life into the world, which, like, what more magical thing than that is there in this life?
The more I hear these stories, every single person I interview, the more I realize how much of a miracle each conception is.
Totally.
And baby. Yes. It's a miracle. There's no other way to describe it. I know there's so much freaking science and they have it. Yeah. They understand how it works. It's still a fucking miracle, right?
I agree with you.
Pretty insane.
It is. And I think that that's also a way of really appreciating humanity more, that each of us, if we're here, is a miracle, you know, because we got here and that itself is one.
And we're here still. Yeah. That gave me the chills. And it's true.
I think so.
Yeah. So what happened? So take us through it.
Yeah. So basically ours was the kind of story. And the reason I say it that way is, like, you know, Karen and I have done bereavement groups, and, like, we've heard a lot of people's stories now. There's kind of, like, types. I mean, every story is different, but, like, there are some where something might have been wrong early or something. We didn't have that. We had everything's great, great, great. The only thing that was, this wasn't a problem. It was just a reason for some stuff later on. So my wife's first pregnancy with Leo, she had an anterior placenta, which means your placenta is, like, towards the front. And that can make it hard to feel kicking, which would, you know, be part of the reason that we didn't know that Leo was stillborn until Leo was delivered. Because sometimes one of the indicators that people who experience pregnancy loss of all kinds might have is that there used to be kicking and now there's less kicking, or now there's no kicking, God forbid. And for us, like, my wife really never felt kicking because of the position of the placenta, which, you know, I mean, there are ways like you could get a Doppler or whatever, like, in order to deal with that. We had no indication until things went very wrong that anything at all was wrong. So my wife delivered at 33 weeks and 6 days. Her pregnancy until that point with Leo was, like, without issue. I mean, we had gotten genetic testing on the embryos. There was nothing, and continued to be nothing, like, after everything happened that was, like, the reason. I'm just covering this because, like, sometimes people ask that question and I understand it.
And science was involved in like, know exactly what created Leo.
I mean, I know sometimes, you know, when recounting stories of death and grief, people are like, oh, you know, you shouldn't ask someone what happened, which I agree with. But I also like to give all the details because I'm a very nervous person. And like, I always am like, okay, but what could we have done differently? The unfortunate answer is like, I don't know that there was anything in our case because we really tried to, you know, pinpoint like, well, what about this moment? And what about this moment? And there really wasn't anything, but
right.
But anyway, so everything was fine.
Drive yourself crazy doing that too.
Yeah, right? Yeah. But I do get it from the perspective of people who are like, but I just don't want to have something bad happen. And like, I totally get that. So around just a few days prior, so it would have been 33 weeks and maybe a couple of days, my wife had a blood pressure reading that was a little high. But then during the same visit, she had one that was normal. And for those perhaps like following along, you know, with your own knowledge, preeclampsia as a diagnosis is the conjunction of three things: high blood pressure, high protein in your urine, and bloating. The problem is that all three of those can also be signs of pregnancy itself. So it can be confusing to discern like whether there is a diagnosis, which is why you have to have all three prongs and people like don't want to diagnose you until you have them all in any event. So high blood pressure, she was bloated, and then she had protein in her urine that was like high, but it required a 24-hour urine test, which she did the next day and brought in, you know, the results of that. And that test would conclude that her protein was in fact very high, but the results of that test came back once we had already delivered. And we delivered, like it was in the middle of the night. Karen woke up and, you know, she was having like really intense pain. And we went to the hospital and basically Leo was delivered within like 5 minutes, not even like in triage. And so they call it a bat out of hell delivery. And it's like,
oh, geez.
Yeah. And so she just shot out basically. And it was terrifying. And we had no idea.
When this was happening, they still didn't know that.
Right.
Oh, that's my right. God.
Yeah. I mean, it sounds like you don't even have to say. I mean, it was super traumatic. It was super jarring. Yeah. And
I'm so sorry.
Thank you. Sorry. Yeah. So that was what happened. And that was November 10th of 2021. And that would, you know, initiate like a grieving process for us as a family, of course, which comprised for us. I mean, we did therapy, we did bereavement group. You know, I took off, like that was November 10th. I took off basically through the end of the year. Karen had maternity leave that, or, you know, bereavement leave that was like basically maternity leave, except not maternity leave. And so we had the time and space to grieve. There were many things about that time that like I feel very grateful for, just that we had it.
Like what?
Well, just that like our respective work lives allowed for it to happen. So I think it would have been really hard. I mean, beyond hard had we had that happen. And then it's like, right, you got to go right back out to doing what you're doing.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's what I mean. You know, I mean, we were aware, as I think many people are, when something like that, when, you know, pregnancy loss and stillbirth can be precipitators of like a couple breaking up. That's like statistically, I think, a thing. You know, I don't think we ever had that specific concern, but we also wanted to avail ourselves of all of the support that we could find. And so we are part of this group. It's called Pockets of Light. And I think it's local to New Jersey, but I offer the name just in case anybody listening like is going, first of all, I'm sorry if you're going through this beyond.
Yes. Yes.
And secondly, even if they're not the people for your area, I'm guessing they might know the people for your area.
The website might have resources for other areas. Might.
Yeah. And yeah. We found it to be very helpful because it's a very like it's once a week and, you know, it's a meeting and it's like something that like you can bring your stuff to, you know, emotional stuff to this meeting that you know is happening at the same time every week. So I guess in that sense, like therapy, it kind of has that regularity that goes along with it that I think is helpful. And hearing other people's stories and connecting with other people in the group and the facilitators and, you know, some of the readings that they would offer, like it was all really helpful.
Mm-hmm. I have a question for you. And if you don't have an answer, you don't have to answer. But, you know, our friend Melissa went through this. She lost her twins at like 40 weeks, both of them.
Yeah.
And I have my ex-girlfriend, actually, they had a stillborn little girl like a couple months after our first daughter was born. And they actually came on and told their story. This was a long time ago, actually.
I'll have to listen to that episode.
Yeah, you should. Sarah and Hillary was the, and I think it was in season two.
Okay.
Season two or season three for everybody listening.
Yeah.
I don't know what to do. I didn't know what to do. Sure. You know, when I heard the news about Melissa, it's like, I am feeling so much sadness for what you're going through. And I understand it to the best of my ability. But like, was there anything that folks did for you that was helpful or like?
Yeah, I think it was being there. You know, like I remember earlier in my own life, not being the person who would reach out in moments of grief because I didn't want to say the wrong thing. Mm-hmm. And there definitely are wrong things, but I think that I submit that the wrong things are easier to avoid than people think, because the wrong things is when you make it about you. That's how you're doing, like being there for someone wrong. And so I remember feeling it. And then I read it, like a friend of mine is a psychologist and like sent around something. I don't remember why I was privy to it, but like, it was like, you know, how to mess up being there for someone in grief. And one of the ways was like, they call it over-identifying. And so if you're, you know, like when I lost my dad, people who were like, well, I lost my, and I'm like, I don't care.
Wait, hold on, Liz. Like what I just did about naming
the friends
I know?
No, I don't mean it that
like,
way.
Like, did I just fuck up
so bad? Oh, I 100% don't think so. Well, first of all, because I'm not actively grieving now in a way. Like, you know, of course, like grief is always there. But no, I really wasn't saying that at all. Not even a little. But I think that there's this like tendency that people want to like be like, I know because X, Y, Z. And it's like, you don't have to have a reason to know. And it is, for whatever reason, it kind of is like the nails on a chalkboard. Like it just strikes, I think, a grieving person off where it's like, because here's why. I can break it down, I think, practically, is because when people would say stuff like that, then I'm like, oh God. So now I have to respond to that comment on Facebook or whatever and be like, I'm so sorry.
Right.
I hope your dad's memory is for a blessing, which I do, but
now not the time.
Is not when I need to be the person who's saying that. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's the, I don't know. I'm not, you know, trained in any way about this stuff, but like, I'm guessing that that's why. And it's kind of like, you're in an active state of grief. Like I am, I mean, some people say that they don't like, I'm so sorry. I don't really care. But I have a friend who's like, I don't want to hear sorry. I'm like, okay. To me, that doesn't bother me. But maybe if you, I mean, if whatever.
It comes down to, we all grieve so differently.
Sure. Yeah.
Grief is such a personal journey and nightmare in so many ways, right?
It is. And I think that like, you know, the people who really stood out were just like, hey, I'm really sorry. Or, hey, I'm sending you so much love. You know, people send a lot of blankets, I noticed. We still have them. You know, if ever anybody wants to stay over my house, believe me, you have your choice of blankets. I think that's great. But like, I don't think that, you know, you ever, like, I don't think you have to send anything. I think it's very kind to reach out. And like, you know, one of the things that experiencing grief directly, both because of Leo and also when my dad died and also when our cat Mona died, and all three of those examples happened within a short period of time and make up the things that I talk about on the album. I mean, the album is about stillbirth and the stillbirth specifically of Leo. But because I, in constructing the material for that album, I mean, some of the funny stuff, but also I really wanted to say something because I'm like, if I'm going to do this, I want to like really have a point and have it be like meaningful and honest and like responsive in topic and gravity to what happened if I'm going to do this at all. And so one of the things that was very powerful to me as an insight was the strangeness, in addition to the sadness, but also the strangeness of grieving for somebody who never lived, even though she did exist. Because like when I think of my dad, or even when I think of Mona, our cat, like those are different griefs from each other, but they share that I knew them. Like if I think about my dad, I can think of memories of my dad. And when I think of Mona, I can think, oh, she used to be right here. And like, you know, her voice cracked like a bar mitzvah boy, you know, when she meowed. And these were elements of her life and existence. And you know what I mean? Whereas when I think of Leo, it's all like hope. And it's this abstract kind of grief. And that was something. And I have some other insights that I think are deep. I do think that they were. I mean, you know, it was like a thing, a big thing that happened. And so anyways, I won't say all of them. And I encourage people, if you want to listen to the album. It's called A Very Particular Experience. And again, it's available, you know, iTunes and Spotify and Sirius and anywhere you can get a song, pretty much. Anyway, I feel after those tragedies have struck me directly that if I hear of someone who is experiencing grief, I want to be the person to reach out. I am, I want to be the person to hear about it. I'm not afraid I'm going to catch it. I'm not, you know, like all of these things. Like I remember as a kid, I had OCD where if I even thought about death, I would have to wash my hands. Oh. And I was so afraid. I've never been afraid of my own death, but I've always been afraid of other people's death. And so, and I think like being around grief was like kind of scarier for me because of that. And then I had so much of it in my life. And now, you know, I do believe it's changed me for the better. Not that, you know, it was good that it happened, obviously, but like, you know, one byproduct, silver lining, what have you, is that I'm like, yeah, I want to talk to you. And I think that to your question, long answer, sorry for that, is
love it.
That like being willing to be the person who is the person who's there, who's emailing, who's calling, you know.
Yeah, who's there.
Yeah.
I love that answer. Thank you. I like that long answer. Sure. And then tell me, when did you decide, okay, we're gonna try again? How did that go?
I mean, it basically, like, it was very much Karen being ready. So she didn't have to, based on the nature of the physical delivery, she didn't have to wait. Sometimes that's a part of it. It wasn't in our case. She was cleared, like, not immediately, but like relatively soon. And that was like due to the bat out of hell delivery and like, you know, just like whatever, she was fine physically. And so it just was like, we wanted to grieve. And then when Karen felt ready, we did again. I mean, it was just that simple.
And it took the first try again.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Which is really lucky. And we were also very lucky in terms of Eloise's delivery, that it was like very smooth.
That's good.
Yeah.
And she went full term and everything was.
Yeah. So she delivered at 38 weeks. She was going to be early and induced, but she didn't have to be. It just kind of worked out well. But she would have been induced because, as you and others may know, the more weeks of pregnancy, the higher the risk. And once you've had a loss, I think most doctors will just institute that as a rule for you, that you've got to be induced.
They want to make sure you get
a
good outcome this time.
Yes.
For lack of a better way of saying it.
Yeah, no. I know what you mean. And I'm not a doctor, but like just, you know, based on my experience as a patient or even patient adjacent in these contexts, that's something that I've come to understand.
Yeah. Well, I mean, congratulations. And thanks. This just happened. You have a newborn.
Yep.
You have a 4-month-old.
Yeah.
How's it going?
Thank God. It's going really well.
Oh my God. Well, you are in it. You're in the thick of it. You're not calling her an asshole yet. So
yeah,
you will at some point. Maybe you won't. Maybe you're, you know, one of the good parents. My kids are an asshole on a daily basis, but yeah. That's just, you know, that's just the way it rolls in our house.
Yeah. It's just life. Yeah. So that's where we're at.
Well, I'm so happy you came and shared your story.
Me too. I'm so
Thank
glad.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Jamie.
This has been really fun. Yeah. Say one more time where everybody can find you, where everybody can find your show and all the stuff.
Yeah. So I'm Liz Glazer, and that's my handle, LizGlazer at, you know, TikTok, Instagram, whatever. And then DearLizGlazer.com, like you're writing me a letter, is my website, and you can write me there. And the album is called A Very Particular Experience, and it's available everywhere.
Perfect. I love it. Everybody go listen. Everybody go watch the album.
Yeah,
can you watch and listen? You can watch
too. So far, it's audio. I'm working on a documentary about the making of it.
Oh, cool.
Which will have a video component.
That's awesome.
Thank you.
Okay. Well, everybody go do that thing. Download the stuff. Listen. Share it far and wide.
Yeah.
And
please.
Thank you so much, Liz.
Thank you, Jamie. This was really a pleasure. I so appreciate you.
I appreciate you. Oh, that was good.
Queer Family Podcast.
A special thanks once again to our sponsor, California Cryobank. Don't forget, y'all, use that code QueerFam, QUEERFAM, for a free level 2 subscription to their donor catalog. Go make those babies, y'all, and then come tell me about it. Go make them. Go ahead. Go ahead.
Love is love.
Well, folks, I hope you enjoyed the episode as much as I did. Thanks so much for tuning in. If you liked what you heard, go ahead and listen to another one or watch another one on YouTube. Sky's the limit. We have so many episodes for you, full of queer family goodness. Who doesn't want that? Who doesn't? And if you really do like what you see or what you hear, you know what to do. Follow on all the socials, y'all. I am the Queer Family Podcast on Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, and YouTube. And on YouTube is where you're going to get those video episodes, which are bomb, if I do say so myself. And don't forget to rate, review, subscribe wherever you get your podcasts, because those things help us get this show out to an even bigger and wider audience. And in the name of representation, that's the whole goal here, right? Let's get these queer family beautiful stories out there. Okay, thank you so much for tuning in. Continue to tune in, and I'll see you next time. I love y'all. I really do.
Sick of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a Swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget. Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.